I'd like to welcome you to today's Global Health Perspectives podcast. My name is Derek Yach, and I'm the president of the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World. We've been exploring issues at the nexus of smoking and global health, and we'll focus today particularly on some of the experiences and responses that Angela Hoffman could bring us within the US, particularly also with a global perspective. I'm really thrilled to have Angela join. She's a board member of the foundation and helps us steer through and think through the long-term goals. But for now, let me start, Angela, by really just asking you to talk about what seem to be two themes I get from understanding your background and experiences. The one, a deep technical insight into the complex supply chains that allow all of us to access the products and consumers that we take for granted, and how that really has worked in your background. And then secondly, clearly your passion and driving force for ensuring that women assume a leadership role in international trade and business. So maybe just exploring both of those would be a great start.
Great. And Derek, thank you so much for having me here today. It's really an honor to be part of this podcast, and looking forward to sharing some of my perspective. So I would tell you that my background includes both a policy perspective, a business perspective, and an interface in helping businesses of all sizes sort of navigate the global supply chain. And the two really came together when I was just starting my career with both the policy initiatives related to developing countries, actually helping get the AGOA, so the African Growth and Opportunity Act, off the ground, and helping us target sub-Saharan African supply chain opportunities, as well as work in the Caribbean and in Southeast Asia. But I've also worked on a number of very large trade deals over the years that were for large multinationals as well, and helping them not only understand how to navigate supply chains, but also helping bring down costs, navigate risk, and explore new partnership opportunities by best understanding how the global trading system all comes together. And in all of that, I've had the opportunity to be part of some fantastic organizations with women at the core, because the studies really show every dollar you invest in a woman in a community is invested tenfold. And so really making sure that as we open these opportunities, economic opportunities in particular, that there's a keen focus in working with local NGOs and partners and making sure those dollars are directed to women leaders in the communities who will then invest in education and more development. Again, that tenfold return on investment.
Great, and we're going to come back to that. Maybe just to turn to your more recent experience with Walmart and knowledge of their global supply chain. I think what it's interesting is that the COVID-19 pandemic has heightened the awareness that we all have and the dependence we have on very complex supply chains for the things we use in everyday life, from food, pharmaceutical, our smartphones. And I would just love initially your thoughts about what do you think is going to be one of the outcomes of the COVID-19 period? Are we going to be returning to try and put globalization back in the box? Are we going to be looking at some new balance between what we produce domestically for self-sufficiency? Or are we going to be looking at how we protect our global supply chains even more to actually allow for the modern economy to move?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I will preface it in this way. We can't assume that products are 100% made in the USA. And what we are seeing here, whether you are a manufacturer of a high industrial speaker that goes into a hospital ward, it's highly likely that there are components coming from other countries that simply aren't made here in the US and will not be made in the US. So that supply chain is very important. The cotton that goes into a lot of the products, and whether it's the bedding, the linen, that's grown here in the US, it may be assembled in other markets. Some of those supply chain jobs will not come back to the US. We've integrated so high with technology that we are doing sort of finishing and components. But I think the real question for COVID is having a good, diverse supply chain and being able to flex and shift, have the conversations with your suppliers. Keep in mind, we're not only in the middle of COVID, but we're in the middle of a global trade war. And so there's so much uncertainty in the market right now about how we are trading, what's happening for domestic supply and demand, and then ultimately what even the short-term, mid-term, long-term outlook will be for planning purposes. So more than anything, I would say it's really important for these organizations to be looking at sort of all of the above. What is your short-term plan for getting your products produced? What is the midterm that you could shift areas of production if you do have manufacturing here in the US? And then the long term, are these the supplier relations that make sense in the future or more make you more nimble? And some of those things can be onshored. There's no doubt about that. I think a lot of these products will come back that we need to have additional capacity here in the US, and those will be smart investments as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, many people who listen will be coming from this from a public health perspective, understanding the role of government. But I think what you bring is a sense of how do multinationals ensure that they have common standards to protect workers, in this case, against COVID-19, but in others, against other infections right across the supply chain? And how deep is this starting to reach into, for example, the agricultural supply chain and the women in smallholder farming? I think some of your insights about that would be very valuable for people to understand, because it shows we're already crossing national borders with the reach and potential of multinationals.
And that's true. And I think if you're a small grower or large multinational, you're having the same question before you, which is, if I immediately produce something, where in the supply chain does it go next? Where is it being further processed? Could it be packaged? Could it be shipped, labeled, and then sent to the consumer? At the end of the day, you know, many of our companies that are providing consumer-facing goods want to make sure you're doing that just in time. So you want to make sure that the supply chain is, as, again, fast, nimble, and able to deliver as possible. In other cases, there are decisions being made right now. Am I going to plant cotton or am I going to plant alfalfa? If I'm not planting cotton, that could have serious ramifications for other industries upstream. Cotton ginners, for example, won't be in business if there's no cotton to sell. Will we be able to make the various cotton items that we need at the end of the day if that supply chain is disrupted? We're also having a lot of conversation about processing in the meat industry right now. And if we don't have the capacity, we certainly have the animals, but if we don't have the capacity to process it, what happens? And so I would imagine that we would be doing a lot of sort of reinventing the supply chain and trying to address some of those interconnected issues in terms of upstream.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm struck by is how when I was at PepsiCo, there were many global crises, and the ability and the nimbleness of the company to jump in well before even the government and the large NGOs were able to be there, they were able to get water into places where there was a drought and do things. I just love your reflections, since I know you were around when some of the crises related to Katrina happened, about how fast and nimble corporations can and are in these crises, particularly compared to the slower pace that government by nature tends to move.
Well, and that's exactly true. I mean, I have the opportunity to work through the situation when Hurricane Katrina impacted us so heavily, and it was amazing to see how nimble the company was. In fact, the trucks had been loaded days before, and that's because they combined a keen sense of knowledge around how consumers react to an emergency. And by the way, they react differently all across the country. What you may need in a Florida hurricane is very different from a blizzard in the north, and how they prepare. And I think a lot of those learnings are actually being used right now during the COVID-19 situation. So coming from a point of customer need, end user need, and then backing up how you provide the correct response, I think is something that these companies work very well together. They also work very well together in identifying where those products are in the supply chain. If you're moving masks around, if you're moving MREs, if you need tents, cook stoves, and more, they have a lot of insight into where those products are available, and they work very well in a coordinated response.
Yeah, and I think now we're seeing that this issue of testing and getting protective gear into the right place at the right time is pretty fundamental to whether you can open up or not. And I would imagine that we're probably going to see a combination of the military capability and the corporate capability being able to do this faster than each state trying to develop their own system.
I imagine that's going to be the case. And certainly, you know, there's so much logistic expertise out there, you know, combined with the leadership in the health community. I would hope that we would continue to enable those organizations, again, keeping in mind business, government, and non-governmental organizations working together effectively to deliver those products to the right place at the right time.
Let me just turn to your involvement in women in leadership. And, you know, some people are making the observation that the leaders of Germany, New Zealand, Denmark, and Taiwan share two things in common. They are women leaders, and they are countries that have shown decisive progress in the COVID-19 period. And it'd be interesting just to get your perspective on, is that really true? And what is it about that we would benefit from by having a stronger voice of women in leadership, not just at government, but across other sectors of society?
Well, the women's empowerment has been something I've been passionate about my entire career. And it's not just women's empowerment in the supply chain, but it's in the boardroom. It's in making decisions about your sourcing. It's making decisions about investments. And I think there's a broader perspective. I mean, women tend to lead with the thought about people over profits first. And that, I think, brings in what do we do first to make sure that our people are safe, they're well fed, they're educated, and they are economically empowered. And there's also a very, very strong global network with women organizations. They tend to mentor one another. They tend to lead another through a supply chain or through a leadership situation. They communicate very well. Not to say that men don't communicate very well, but I do think these women leaders work together and have worked together for years and years and years. And it's a sharing of knowledge, but also expertise and support. So I don't know if that's exactly what's happening here in the supply chain, but if I had to speculate, I would suspect that they're leveraging both, you know, a deep compassion for how they're immediately dealing with the situation, but also a vast network of support.
Yeah, that's certainly what I think when we look at the way in which Angela Merkel, for example, projects herself, a strong background in science, a deep empathy for the people who are going to be affected, and the ability to rise above the party political fray of the day. And simply execute. And I think that's been a real focus. I particularly like your phrase of saying that this focus on people above profits, focusing on what really matters in people's lives, seems to be a dominant thing emerging in the successful parts of the country and the world.
Absolutely. And that's what's going to get us through this next phase. You know, coming together, putting our politics aside, and then truly leveraging our respective strengths. And whether you're coming from the NGO community, the business community, the government perspective, there's a lot we can contribute. And in every experience that I've been in, solving difficult problems means bringing people of very diverse backgrounds together to tackle those challenges. And by the way, the end product is always better than you anticipated in the beginning.
Well, I think on that optimistic note, let me thank you enormously, Angela. And we will continue to draw upon you for insights as we move ahead. And let me thank people for listening and really let you know that if you want more information, please contact us at podcast@smokefreeworld.org. And stay safe. And let's all try and have that spirit of positivity that Angela left on, because there will be a better future. Thank you.